Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Pudri Realita. Pudri is Global Diversity and Inclusion Lead at Danone. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm with Pudri Realita. I'm really excited about that. I saw her, I think it was Future Work Scenarios Conference, talking about what she does looking after diversity and inclusion at Danone. And that's why I invited her to join me here, because diversity and inclusion has been a topic in corporate real estate increasingly lately as well to build the future of work. So hi, Pudri.
Hi, Sabine. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. It's finally sunny in Zurich, so I'm happy.
Same here in Paris.
Can we start with looking at what your role as Global Diversity and Inclusion Lead at Danone is, what your mission is in that role?
Yes. So for someone like me who really initiated a role, this role new in Danone, so there was not such a role before. So for me, it was actually also my role to shape the role. So it's like, I'm really involved in the, okay, what does this role do for Danone? And basically, there are two key things. So for the first one is really to help create an equitable, inclusive, and collaborative culture. So it's really about company culture through leadership role modeling. So I think the word role modeling is also key here. And also building sense of belonging for the employees, but also through the empowerment of our employees. We have 100,000 employees across the globe, and we want to give the voice for every one of them to be the driving force of, we call it a people-powered company. And also the second one is to include everyone across Danone supply chain. So of course, we always start with the employees, but we have to also include our consumers, but also our community wherever we operate. And we will have to enhance diversity whenever Danone operates. So it's different in the US and in China, what diversity means for each country. And we have to empower the countries to really enhance diversity, whatever that means for them, to be really evolving the needs of the employees at the workplace. And this is also linked to the future of work as well.
Now, I might be really naive here. How do you do that? Is there like workshops that you run, or is there like certain guidelines you put out, like for corporate diversity standards, these kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting role in the company, and it really has different types of ways of how we do that. So the first thing is really to build commitment. And this commitment is so important. And this commitment needs to come from the top. So the top means the CEO and also the his or her team. So this, we call it the executive committee. And then of course, the commitment is the first thing to start with, but it's not the only one. And then we have to build awareness within the company. And when I started, there was a very little awareness about the topic in the company. So therefore, it's also important to create this awareness and engage the people, everybody into this journey. And this is done through trainings, through communications, and also through engaging the champions. So this is also about engaging passionate people in the company. So to be able to empower them to drive changes together in the company in this topic. And of course, also we have to look at companies' policies. So policies is also important. It's like parental policy, we implemented a gender neutral parental policy globally in across our more than 55 countries. And this gender neutral is important because we don't differentiate whether it is a man or woman or binary gender, regardless of gender, you can take either primary or secondary caregiver parental leave. So policies such as, for example, how we recruit, and if we want to build gender balance functions. So for example, like in operations or in IT, which is more male dominated, and we want to improve gender balance in this function. So we put in place policies like we need to have diverse gender balance shortlisted candidates if you want to recruit new people in the jobs. And also we do mentoring programs for women's talents to be able to strive in this, say, male-dominated roles, let's say. And also we, not only policies, but also how we bring everyone in the journey in terms of the different regions. So I mentioned before that in the US, race can be a big topic there, but it may not be as strongly resonate as in the US, in China, or in Indonesia, for example. And there may be the biggest topic is religion or gender or generations, diversity, for example. So how we really work with the different countries to build their local D&I roadmaps to be able to make it relevant for their local people and local business.
So it's not a one size fits all. You really dive into the countries and cultures and see what's the thing that needs balancing.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. And we're going to go a step back. How do I become a diversity and inclusion lead? What's your professional background?
Yeah, it's really, I think that I met my peers in the other companies, and they come from diverse backgrounds, because I think this role is really what is needed the most is a business acumen and also strong influencing skills. So I think these two are the most important. So regardless of your background, so for example, myself, I have quite a diverse background in my career. So I started my career in the factory. So because I have a scientific background, I have a biotechnology degree. So I spent my first 5 years in the factory. So in various roles like product development, manufacturing, quality management, etc. And then I moved to corporate affairs. So it's more about communications, government relations, public affairs, CSR. So I moved to this role after 5 years, and then doing that for about 10 years. And then now I moved to D&I. So it's like I don't have HR background. I know that many people in these roles have HR backgrounds. But I think I also met many that come from marketing, come from sales, for example. So I think that also, it's important that for Danone, before they were looking for someone with no HR background, because they want to make D&I is not seen as HR topics, because it has to be seen as a business topics. It has to be seen as a more holistic and really driving the business forward instead of just separate HR topics.
I think that's really smart to make it this focus, really, and dedicate it not within that HR organization, but to highlight it really. And you said you don't only work for the company's employees' diversity inclusion, but it includes the consumer as well. So it makes sense, because you will work with marketing, for example, I'm assuming. It's just actually another question I had. Who are your stakeholders within the company?
It's everybody. Everybody is my stakeholders. So
sounds really, like a busy job.
I work with everyone in the company. So from the top management, from CEO, from the executive committee, HR, marketing, operations. So people, senior leaders who are leading these different functions, but also people in the factories, the employees themselves. So the champions that I mentioned before. So basically it's really across the different levels of in the organizations, really to make sure how we can embed D&I as part of people's mindset and how we are doing things, how we our ways of working every day.
Are there certain challenges that you are typically facing with these initiatives?
That's exactly the challenge that I just mentioned, to really make D&I embedded in the mindset of everyone in the company and how it is reflected in the ways of working in the company. And so I think it's a journey. So yeah, because it's a big company as well, and we are operating in a different countries, and different countries have different understanding or different maturity of understanding this topic. And it has to be, and we need also to be inclusive in terms of, you know, bringing them into the journey, because everybody has a different kind of spectrum to be able to be an inclusive leader. So there is a different level. So first is the company level, which means that we can do it through policies, through awareness, communications, etc. But the real change happens at teams and individuals level. So those would require really a longer journey to really embed it in how teams are working, because they are working cross-culturally, and also how team leaders are building in their teams in an inclusive way. Not only hiring that diverse people, but also how to give a voice for everyone in the team, and also build innovation and high-performing teams leveraging these differences. So I think that this is the most difficult things to do, the change at the team and individuals levels.
But I find that at the same time a very interesting aspect of it, because with these big topics, whether it be diversity, inclusion, or sustainability, or you tend to think, well, it's just me as an individual, what can I do? But now you're saying it's actually the most important that my mindset changes and that I'm aware of the things I'm doing and saying and putting out there and how I work or hire other people into my team. So that actually is a hopeful note for me to say I can start with me getting that to that change that is required, and then you can start to build upon that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, how do you tell your friends and family what you do?
Yeah, this is the challenging part. When I started this role, when I was not so clear, because I was shaping the role at the same time, actually didn't know what to tell. So now I know. So maybe like during the second year, I already know, okay, this is the mission of my role. And the way I tell them was different. So before I told them, my role is really to make Danone more diverse. So they were like, okay. That sounds like a very nice word, but I cannot imagine that directly. Now, I when people ask me what you are doing, so I will tell them that I am making Danone more relevant and connected to their consumers globally across the 55 countries. So then with that, they understand. So they're like, okay, eating yogurt in France is different than eating yogurt in the Middle East.
Well, the way you eat it in the Middle East, you might eat it with a spicy dish.
Exactly.
It's the dessert. Yeah.
Exactly. So we need to, as a company who produces products, we need to understand the differences across the different culture, and food and drinks is all about the choice of people of food and drinks. It's completely driven by culture, personal needs, personal choices. So if we don't embrace diversity and inclusion, we will not be able to serve our consumers the best way possible.
And you won't sell in the end.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
I want to make this a little more tangible from the workplace point of view. What do you think are factors that contribute to diversity and inclusion in the workplace if we look at the physical environment?
So I think I mentioned this before. I think there are three big things. So first is the company policies that are affecting the workplace. So that would include the parental policy, for example, flexibility policy, how companies are allowing giving flexibility by understanding the needs, the different needs of their employees. So they are probably single young people, but also people with family or people with parents who need to take care of, for example. So we need to really, as a company, the D&I would help really to build this empathy and build policies to be able to serve this evolving needs of employees. So that's the first thing. The second factor is HR processes. So HR processes is about how we recruit, how we promote, how we reward, how we recognize, how we assess people. So these are all the things that are contributing in a big way to D&I. So how we can remove biases from all these processes, and that these processes are done in the most equitable way possible. And I think this is also one of the biggest challenges that I mentioned before, how to make it as part of ways of working. HR processes is one of them, of the ways of working, because it has to be really embedded in, okay, we want to reward more inclusive leaders, for example. So if we make inclusion as part of the key behaviors that people are, you know, being promoted or people being assessed in their performance reviews. So that is being one of the key factors. And then the third one is the third and the and I think the most important are the leaders, the team leaders, through their behaviors. So I think this is super important, because people will see at the company level, this is what I mentioned about company level, teams level, and individuals level. So at the company level, if people see, oh, the company is committed, the company is progressing, but in their day-to-day life in the company, if they have non-inclusive leaders, then they will see that it's not happening. It's not a reality. So leaders, with their behaviors every day with their teams, how they embed inclusion in their day-to-day behaviors, it's another key factors for D&I at the workplace.
How's Danone then envisioning the future of work in terms of, are people allowed to work flexibly from home or in the office going forward?
Yeah, I think that COVID has given many companies lessons to learn. And I think that companies need to really think ahead of how the world, well, it's already looking like that now, but I think it's going to be more and more in the future like this. So therefore, I think that flexible offices is something that is, that will be a must for many companies. And the way we envision this, I mean, we are not yet doing it, but we are looking at things like that. We don't call it office anymore, we call it people hub. So it's going to be based on where people are. So they can have an office wherever they can strive the most. So it can be their home, or there could be, for example, if there is a place where some people in the same company are located, so they can also rent this office together, and that becomes the new people hubs, for example. So something like that. So it's still in the thinking and in the process of making it happen, but this is the way we are going. And flexibility in terms of also the parental policy, not only about parents, but also how we include also employees who don't have kids, because parental policy are only for those who have kids. But there are also employees who don't have kids, which maybe they have parents or they have other siblings they need to take care of. And they also can, we need to think about how these employees can also be included in terms of giving them flexibility or time to really bind with this as well. So I think those are the things that we are looking at. And in terms of technology, we can think of, again, the HR processes and how the future, the role of AI helping HR processes to become less and less biased. And there's still pros and cons about the use of AI, because AI can also be biased at the end of the day. So this is something that is really, that I think if there is a solution for that, that would be really amazing, to really make this HR processes without bias as much as possible.
Now, I'm more familiar with the real estate side of things. And the question has been, when we look at office design or going forward, the people hub design, is there certain things you can get right, or you can, on the contrary, do really wrong, and that would then foster or hinder diversity and inclusion?
I think that it really needs maturity in terms of how companies put their trust in their people, because I think trust is the most important thing. And I think this is not easy to, because there is always, why should I give this flexibility to my employees? Because otherwise they will not using this for the purpose of the company and something else. So I think this is something that is, that could go wrong, but on the other hand, that could go right. But I think each industry or each company has the same challenge. And I think it takes time to build this kind of trust. And therefore, I think it's also a journey to reach the full implementation of future of work. So maybe it will work in one country and not the others at the beginning. But I think with time, but also with how companies are building this awareness and trainings, and also the how we change the people processes as well, the HR processes. So this is also a link back to how we assess people. So for example, if you put performance review only once a year, that's kind of like, I don't know, it's like put away the trust element. And I think the trust element will be bigger if there is a regular performance review that employees can get, and not only once every end of the year, and suddenly your manager say you don't do a good job, for example. So I think there's a lot of things to be done in terms of changing also the people's processes in the company.
Yeah, the key, what you just said for me, is time, because I think also for future of work, what should the office look like? It would be the worst thing to say, okay, this is now the blueprint for the future office. We're going to apply it to all our locations globally now and expect that this is then going to be used and adopted. It takes that time and iteration to get used to the new, and then also be able to revert if it doesn't work somehow. Drawing from your experience, or actually I want to pick your brain a little, because corporate real estate has been in the past, and I don't know how it is at Danone, you might have some insights into that, very much focused on financial metrics as performance measures all around capacity, density, cost optimization. Although that's not really very well reflecting on employee experience and well-being in that workplace. Now, the question is, how can companies turn their workplace strategies to become more human-centric and to include more metrics that reflect upon that?
I think it's really come back to how people are being measured and assessed, and at the same time, how companies are being measured and assessed. So I think that nowadays there are more and more ESG is playing more and more roles in terms of how investors are looking at companies, even though it's still very not as big as I expected. But I think it's already there. And I think because of all the different incidences happen around the world, like the George Floyd incident in the US or many other incidences in the other regions, it's all about the D&I topics. And they are more and more expectations from consumers as well, from the public towards companies. And therefore, this is why the ESG has become more and more important. And I think the trend is going to the right directions because, you know, with the sustainability and environment, consumers are really demanding companies to be more green. And I think it's the same with diversity. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is how inside the company performance is measured. So it needs to measure not only from the numbers perspective. So leaders need to be measured on also about how they manage their people. And the people part needs to be a key success factors in every leader's performance. So I think that if that is the case, so therefore they will be human-centric by force because they are required to be human-centric. So I think this is the key to, but it's not easy. It's not like, because it's linked to the investors and then to the CEO performance and then linked to the executive committee. So it's, I think that once it is embedded in how people success are measured, so it has to be like 50-50, for example, 50% numbers, 50% people. And therefore, there you will be getting really a balanced workplace where people are human-centric, but they also driving the numbers. So in any case, there are many researchers out there that human-centric companies are really driving the results better and more innovative, more engaged employees. And it's no brainer. There's a lot of research already out there. It's just taking time to really embed it in our systems and processes.
The goal's clear, the journey's the part that gets tricky.
What gets measured gets done.
That's so true. Yeah, you're right. If you don't measure, you don't manage. And yeah, it doesn't get done. That's exactly the point. Now, I'm going to have a question now, and I'm going to make it easy in terms of if you could magically solve any workplace problem, what would it be?
I think it's, for me, I mean, related to D&I, I mentioned before, it's really if we can find a way to remove bias from across our system, from people's mindset, but also how we can measure behavioral change, leveraging technology. So I think this is the answer that I want to find out. So if you have a speaker that can speak about this, how we can help companies and therefore their HR or D&I professionals like me to really measure this behavioral change and make it, like we said before, what gets measured gets done. Because at the moment, we can measure diversity with gender and everything, but inclusion and behaviors change, which is the most important of all, it's still intangible. How do you measure it? So this is something that I would like to see more.
Now, I've taken away my last question. I usually ask who else should I have on the podcast, but you just said that. And I'm afraid I won't have an easy solution or an easy guest for your question, but I'm taking iterations. So I'm talking to a lot of people and I'm trying to get a lot of opinions and stuff to find a way in the end.
Yeah, that's great. I'm looking forward to hear more of your podcast and see if there are some answers within this podcast.
Yeah, so as soon as I have that answer, I'll ping you.
Great. I'll be waiting for your ping then.
Yes. So thank you very much, Poudri, for making that happen, for taking the time out of your day. I'll let you go back to real work.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on corporate real estate in Europe that you can download. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.